Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast, Pod Shots.
All right! Everybody who wants to live, put your hands in the fucking air! Get over here! Get over here now! Get the fuck over here! Get on your knees! All right? What's your name?
Max.
Max is my little fucking dog. If I get your fucking money, he's gonna go fetch. Get it out, put it on the table right now. Get it out. Pray. Pray. Let me hear you fucking pray. Got that money out, boy? Go fucking fetch. Fast. Get it out. Put it in that bag.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Pod Shots. I'm your host, Eric Williams. For this episode, we are discussing the 2013 film The Place Beyond the Pines, written by Derek Cianfrance, Ben Cosio, and Darius Martyr. The film was directed by Derek Cianfrance and stars Ryan Gosling, Bradley Cooper, and Ava Mendez. Here to discuss the film with me is returning guest, Mr. Steve Bruns.
Hey, what's up, Eric?
Before getting into our discussion, I would like to mention that this podcast is brought to you by the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. So let's get into a little drink roll call action. What do you have for me, Mr. Bruns?
I'm going with some wine tonight. I got a Pinot Grigio from 2013 called Macerau or something. Mm. I hope I'm pronouncing it right.
I like that. I like a little Pinot Grigio.
Yeah, not bad. A little lighter tonight.
Yeah, we went on a little wine tasting yesterday.
Oh yeah.
And so that was good times getting to sample some of the. I don't know if you're aware of this or if people care, but Nebraska is really really sweet with their wines.
Oh, I did not know that.
And that is not my groove so much. Oh. So I always go with I try to go with the more dry efforts. And they're still very sweet tasting.
Uh huh.
They kind of get you like right in the underneath the jawline kind of a thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I always thought you're more of a Moscow Mule kind of guy. Weren't you sipping some of those in a downtown Lincoln bar about a year ago for about this time?
Yeah, I was. I like the Mule. You know what's good is now that we're doing a plain label drink podcast, is if you try, Anel's had a few of these, it's a cinnamon mule.
Oh, no, I haven't tried that yet.
So it's cinnamon tequila, and it is your ginger beer, and then a lime wedge.
Uh-huh.
And that was really good. And I think they have, like, a cinnamon stick in there as well. So that I would recommend that.
I have to check my man card at the door if I'm going to order one of them.
I ordered that and enjoyed it, and it was just fine.
All right.
So anyway, speaking of checking man cards, I'm having a grapefruit vodka tonight.
Okay.
And it's pink and I don't give a shit. So let's go ahead and begin our discussion on the 2013 film The Place Beyond the Pines.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing Luke and the Heartthrob.
Is Romina here?
Who's that guy?
He's yours.
You're not gonna tell me.
I heard from you in over a year. Just took off.
My son and I should be around him. I wasn't around my dad. Look the way I turned out.
How are you gonna take care of us?
I can't think of another line of work that I'd rather be in.
You're so smart. You can do anything you want. Just don't understand why you're doing this.
I'm a cop, Chad. Got a kid. You want to provide for that kid. You got to do that using your skill set. And your skill set. Shazam.
All right, everybody wants to live, put your hands in the air.
105 in pursuit of suspect.
104, I got a visual on a motorcycle.
Tom, it's for me. I'm still his father. I can give him stuff.
I'm Officer DeLuca. We're here to search your house.
What for?
We're looking for the money that Luke Glanton, mayor, may not have given to you.
$14,000.
The lion's share is going to our hero.
This is your problem. This is our problem. And I'm bringing it to your attention because that's what I should do.
I want to do two in one day.
Yo, get up!
I'm not going to let you bring us both down.
There's a way out of this. You're not going to like it.
Like lightning, you're gonna crash like thunder.
This review, or not review, this plot synopsis was written by Studio Canal, or however you want to say it, the actual production company that released the film. So I haven't read it. I haven't screened it, so I'm hoping for good things here. And it goes like this. A mysterious and mythical motorcycle racer, Luke, drives out of a traveling carnival globe of death and whizzes through the back streets of Synecdoche, New York, desperately trying to connect with a former love, Romina, who recently and secretly gave birth to the stunt rider's son. In an attempt to provide for his new family, Luke quits the carnival and commits a series of bank robberies aided by his superior riding ability. The stakes rise as Luke is put on a collision course with an ambitious police officer, Avery Cross. He's looking to quickly move up the ranks in a police department riddled with corruption. The sweeping drama unfolds over 15 years as the sins of the past haunt the present-day lives of two high school boys wrestling with a legacy they've inherited. The only refuge is found in the place beyond the pines. So, this was a film that I brought to you. This was a film that I went and saw in the theater, or at the movie theater. In the theater sounds like something different. I went and saw this last summer, I believe. And the reason that I wanted to bring it up, and this kind of, I'm not gonna bury the lead this time on what my viewpoint is of the film, but I didn't know really what I thought of it. I kind of walked away going, huh. And so it's like a film that I continually kind of chew on and wrestle with a little bit. And I think there are things that work really well, and I think that there are things that don't work particularly well. And I think that that, for me, is a really good selection for a show like this. So, that being said, Mr. Bruns, what is your initial reaction to this film?
I'd say I really, really, really liked it for several reasons. First of all, I got knocked off my feet from the very beginning just from the camera work.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The very first image we get where he's in like a trailer and he get himself like kind of geeked up for what is obviously like a very dangerous stunt type carnival ride that he performs in.
Yeah, so and dangerous in fact that Derek Cianfrance's cinematographer from Blue Valentine refused to do the film because of this scene. And one of the stuntmen was almost killed making that scene.
Unreal. Yeah, I didn't even know that information, but I just wanted to talk kind of like the Steadicam or whatever, you know, device they use to follow him in that, you know, long but not too long journey from his trailer to like, it's just like, it almost feels like he would be walking through like a football tunnel or going through like a, you know, the Colosseum to like fight a gladiator or something.
Yeah.
And I just was kind of mesmerized just from the beauty of the images. You know, Ryan Gosling is, right.
He's ridiculous.
He's great. He's really great. I don't want to sound like, you know, like I'm fawning over him too much, but I really respect his abilities and I think he was perfectly cast for this film. I love the development of the character. I loved, you know, to see him struggle. His struggle to me was very compelling to watch, the way that he wrestled with his, I mean, talk about, you know, how you get like in English class, there's like conflicts we discuss, like man versus man, man versus self, man versus the supernatural. Like those are the different categories of conflict. I mean, talk about man versus self. I mean, this is a guy who self-destructs, and he knows that, you know, the things that he's doing are counterproductive to what ultimately he wants. And you can tell he's got feelings for the Ava Mendez character and, you know, the unborn child, the revelation that he, I mean, wow, the acting, the way he brought it up, the way he confronted it, the way that the story kind of develops of him taking this, you know, even further extreme direction to his life and trying to make up, you know, these gambles that he takes. He's reckless, you know, the way that his partner even frayed, you know, broke off from him because he could see that this guy was a losing ticket from the get-go. There's just so many layers to the character. I thought the characters were so round. They were so in depth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even the fellow who plays the African-American, like,
Kofi, you know, husband, right. Yeah. Right.
I mean, even that aspect of it, I mean, talk about the way that he had to confront him in his own home and the way that she even strayed from him, you know, despite, you know, what is so obviously a losing hand that you're supposed to fold. And she makes this destructive decision and, you know, the forgiveness that must have occurred for him to take her back. And, you know, and then we haven't even got to the politics of the shooting yet.
Yeah. I was going to say, that's all your first 45 minutes.
I know. I mean, we haven't even gotten to the big, like, you know, ba-boom, you know, and where the story really takes off.
Sure. Well, you know, yeah.
Whole other character introduced, and it's just I want to, as you know, I'm a very political person.
Yes.
This movie made me see it through a political lens, and I have some other thoughts that I'd like to, you know, share with this as it relates to Ferguson, Missouri, and some other things, but I'll let you speak because I feel like I'm saying too much already.
No, I like it. You know, I was speaking, this is behind the curtain stuff again, but I like when I don't have to carry the discussion so much. Uh-huh. So I think that's why it's good. I like having you on, Steve, because I can set you up and I can just let you go. It's that teacher thing.
Yeah, you know? I guess you got,
sometimes
right.
You gotta just go.
Yeah,
that's good. But yeah, so what I want to do is I want to talk about, if people haven't seen this film, I want to talk about how it's three parts. And mm-hmm. so I want to talk about this Ryan Gosling section first, mm-hmm. and then we can move on to the middle and then the end and then talk about, you know, form and function and why and
yeah
and all that sort of thing. So sticking with the Gosling thing, like, I agree that I think he is tremendous and I really like, I'm really engaged with the story in that he's the man that he is, and he will continue to be that way until Ava Mendez's character reintroduces herself into the picture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he hasn't gone out of his way to find her or to reconnect with her, even though this is the same town that he was in a year ago. You know, he doesn't think enough of her to do that, but he sees her and he's like, oh. And she sort of picks him up in that, you know, she's like, do you remember my name? And he does.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that's kind of interesting. Like, he's not a character that is, from the start, seeking redemption. He's fine with who he is.
Right, right.
You know, it's only through the revelation that she has had a child and it's his. And what I think is interesting, and I talk about this and I use, you know, I haven't used this comparison in a while, but it's a film that I've actually never done one of these on, but it's a character, it's an actor that I've certainly talked plenty about. But I think a good example of what he's doing is similar to what Tom Hardy does in the movie Warrior, where he doesn't speak, like he doesn't have a lot of dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
But he has a lot of internal monologue that you can pick out. You right. can tell he's thinking. He's just not a real
right.
Verbal character. Right. And I think that's rare in film. because, you know, unless they're either narrating or they're saying, hey, Steve, I'm feeling this, you know, and it's almost always very surface.
Right.
And so this guy, he's just a guy that doesn't talk a lot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I like that it's what you were saying about it being a rounded character and everyone in this piece being a round character. I think that goes along with, you know, his character being a guy that, you know, we don't know a lot about him. We know he's dangerous, but he doesn't particularly seem that bright or maybe that well spoken.
Right.
So he, you know, that's just who he is, and that's just not a character that we see in a lead role very often.
Right.
So I really like that.
I totally agree.
Yeah. Yes. And one of the things that I think that Gosling does is he plays the ticking time bomb really well. I think it starts when he finds out that Roe has had a child that the grandmother has told him, and he goes like stomping in the restaurant looking for her.
Right.
And the way that's shot right behind his shoulder, he seems like a dangerous presence. You know, it's not, I don't think that it's handheld, but I don't think that it's steady cam either, because it's gotta be handheld then, but it just feels like he feels dangerous to me, I guess, watching him. You know, this isn't one of his films where he's being like a smooth ladies man, even though he's, you know, involved with Eva Mendes, but he is playing like a little bit of himself, a little bit of that smooth character, but in a bad way. Like if the smooth character grew up in a rough family or something like that. You know what I'm saying? And so I really like that. And I think that he is an interesting actor, because I feel like when I see him in a film, he always gets the benefit of the doubt for me that he's actually a good guy deep down. And he may make bad choices, he may do bad things, but oh, he's a good guy. And I think that they give you a little bit of a glimmer of that here, but I think his actions prove out that he's not really that good of a person.
Exactly. You have so many characters like that you want to root for, because you have this instinct that deep down they would be more good than they would be bad, like Tony Soprano, like clearly an evil character, but so many of his fans wanted to see him prevail because they thought maybe there was more good than bad in him. Ryan Gosling, he makes the kinds of decisions in his life that throw everybody else around him in perpetual peril. At some point, the consequences of that come to roost, and he was never going to be able to be a stable influence or presence in his son's life because of who he was. And so he's like a bull in the china shop, whether that bull is good intentioned or not. You know, maybe it makes you feel some sympathy for the character, but you know, every time he was running from police, or every time he pointed a gun in somebody's face and robbing a bank, he negatively impacted the lives of every one of those people that he assaulted and, you know, could have potentially killed. And, you know, I just look at that as somebody who's, you know, it's probably good that he ended up getting a bullet, because at some point somebody was going to have to pay the price for his choices.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that it's interesting that he is doing bad things, but I can't help smile when he's dancing with the dog and him and his partner, Robin, played by Ben Mendelsohn, who's just one of those guys that's just got a tremendous face. You just look at him, you're like, oh, I know a guy like that. You know, he doesn't look like a Hollywood actor.
Yeah.
But he, you know, he's dancing and they're having a good time, and you know, it's like how they're going to go about breaking into the bank, and I'm like, oh yeah, okay, I'm with these guys, I'm having a good time, you know, and then you're like, oh geez, this is terrible. But at the same time, when he is psyching himself up for this, much like what he does with the motorcycle riding at the beginning.
Right.
I'm like, oh, I'm nervous for him. You know, and that's a word I must have wrote down 7-8 times in my notes for this film.
Yeah, that you're...
Is it makes me, the film makes me nervous.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that I really like that, how I'm feeling, you know, apprehensive for him. I'm like, oh, don't get arrested. You know, do the right thing, finally. And you know, of course, then later, once his story ends, when we have the, you know, he has a different bike and the bike doesn't start right away and he's got a flat, they say, and I'm like, oh no, it's all going bad for him. And you know, that's, I like it. And then at the same time, I'm feeling bad for him and I'm like, what am I doing? Like, but I think that that's just a well crafted story that you're feeling bad for him. Before we get to the end though of this section of the film, I do really like the kind of mechanic scene where Robin, Ben Mendelsohn's character, is kind of showing him the ropes and saying, oh, you know, you could do this, you could stay here, and all of this sort of thing. And it's a little bit like a, it's almost like a montage. And then we have this musical note and this musical scene where he's just driving down the highway and there's trees all around him. And I think the score is so well done at that point, and it is called back to at the end of the film, where it's not the same notes, but it's the same idea of just this guy driving off. And in this section, he's driving from wherever he's at to the town, to his home. And at the end, the character is driving away to go to find a home. You know, to go somewhere new. So I just think that it's an interesting little like musical score dichotomy, or like a little bit of a, you know, mirroring thing. And I think that there's a lot of that in this film, where there's, you know, the opposite sides of the same coin kind of a idea. And I think that was really good. And it was something that, you know, I've seen this is probably like the fourth or fifth time I've seen this movie now. So it's one of those where I've looked at it a few times and I'm like, oh, you know, I keep kind of finding things to admire about it. But before we move on, I do want to talk about the heartbreaking scene for me. And it's after Ro has made her choice and slept with Luke. Ava Mendez has slept with Ryan Gosling. I guess I didn't introduce their names, but it's when she slept with him, they're together, he's introducing the son, the child, to ice cream, they have the waitress take their picture.
Yeah.
And it's this, I don't know if she's from another country or what exactly the deal is with the waitress, but she has a very thick accent. And mm-hmm. She says, "You want another one? You sure I should take it while she's crying?" And it's when he's covering Ro's face, and it's the picture that, you know, you see throughout the rest of the film. Right. But it's one of those things to where, you know, just thinking about, again, the feelings and the emotions that are happening that aren't being explicitly told to the audience.
Right.
But, you know, she's either ashamed or embarrassed or knows that she shouldn't be here and she shouldn't have anything to do with this guy, but yet she's here.
Right.
And, you know, the consequences that she's going to have to face sooner or later. But, you know, I think that that's all really good stuff. And then when Luke finally snaps and bashes Kofi really suddenly and kind of out of nowhere with the pliers,
right,
in the child's room, that was like, I was like, oh my God. And I remember going, oh, when I first watched it in the theater.
Yep.
Because it wasn't just like, you know, he punched him.
Yeah, that could have been a fatal blow.
Yeah. And I mean, you look at him and the blood's just like pooling in like his eye socket area. And I'm like, oh my God.
Right, right.
And that was pretty interesting. But, and then I really like how, and I really like that Luke's story ends.
Uh huh.
You know, I like that we have this essentially a 45 minute-ish short film about him.
Right.
And then it's over. And so from there, it builds into the second part. So what did the second part is mostly focused on Bradley Cooper's character,
right?
Avery Cross is his name, and he's a police officer. And then later runs for assistant district attorney, and then district attorney of New York. So what did you think about this section here? This is the political section.
Yeah, well, I had just my thoughts the whole time are like, well, it's interesting that they're writing the story this way, because what I'm seeing in the film doesn't seem to match the reality of how police either A, behave, or B, how police are trained. Mm. Because whether we're talking about Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, or we're talking about, you know, this guy who was in a Walmart who had like a toy gun who ended up getting shot, or whether it's countless other unarmed, black men who get killed by police on a seemingly daily basis. In this particular case, it seemed to me that because Ryan Gosling had a gun in his arm, or in his hand, I should say, It shouldn't have even mattered based on today's standards whether or not Bradley Cooper fired first or not.
Yeah.
Because it seems to me that the use of deadly force is allowed if at any time there is a reasonable thought that the police officer thinks his life is in danger. It doesn't even need to be a gun. He could have had a kitchen butcher's knife in his hand, and Bradley Cooper, by what I see in the news, by what I see by today's standards, would have been fully justified in using deadly force and firing first. It wouldn't have mattered who fired first. Now, we know, because we actually witnessed the shooting, that to me it seemed like he breached the door. He did say something like, put your gun on the ground, do it now. Brad, you see the phone conversation still's going on because the Ryan Gosling character is holding the earpiece to his hand, but he's got his other hand down with a gun in it. Bradley Cooper obviously sees it. He doesn't drop it. So Bradley Cooper shoots first, I believe.
Yes, he definitely does.
Way back. A shot is fired in Bradley Cooper's direction, and it then strikes and wounds him. Now, based on what happened with Michael Brown, no gun. Michael Brown didn't have a gun.
Right.
When it turned out that this guy that gets shot in the Walmart, he had a toy gun on him, and nobody got charged in that because they thought their life was in danger, because how are they supposed to know? It's a toy gun. So if Ryan Gosling's character has got a gun in his hand, and he has not followed the instruction in dropping it, by what we see with the use of deadly force in modern tech, you know, society with police policy today, he would have been fully justified in shooting him. I don't buy the district attorney or the internal affairs investigation going after him. I don't think they would have treated him like that, because I don't think it would have mattered. I think this guy would have never been what I'm trying to say is I don't believe this part of the story.
Okay.
This part of the story doesn't make sense to me. I don't. Maybe he's purposely writing it counter to reality. Maybe he's trying to make a statement, and I haven't read into it enough. But what I know, based on what I read and what I know about how crime is being handled today, there's no way that police officer would have been doubted in the least at all. They would be making rubber bands for him, saying, "I stand with Bradley Cooper." You know,
right? Especially because he is a bank robber.
Exactly.
He's not just some guy.
Exactly. You
know? And he has hostages.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I just didn't buy that part of the story. Now, so, I mean, yeah, there's the ambition that you see in the guy and the way he kind of navigates the story that, you know, he somehow prevails despite all the things that could have, you know, prevented him from, you know, his ambitions and all that. I mean, I understand it all, but I just have a hard time swallowing this middle part of the movie, because it doesn't jive with reality at all. And I don't think even as art in terms of imitating life, it really does anything for me.
I think what's interesting, too, is Cian France is a director who is, from the two films of his that I've seen, is very realistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Blue Valentine is a film that we've reviewed here on the show, and I believe it was the Movies That Make You Cry theme that Rachel and I did. And it was... that movie is just devastating. to me.
Right.
In how raw and real it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the movie, but it's a hard sit for me each time I decide, like, oh yeah, you know what, I'll throw this in. I must be like a real masochist or something. But yeah, so I can see that. I think that he's so concerned with reality to where I guess I don't know if he is using what Bradley Cooper did, you know, with the shooting first and then having Bruce Greenwood, who I love me some Bruce Greenwood, in the hospital, giving him the interview saying, you know, it went pop, pop like that, you know, and kind of talking him through it and trying to get him to figure out what his story is so he doesn't half remember it and then have to figure out what he said last time. I think he said something along those lines.
Right.
But I really like that section. I just don't think that the circumstance warranted all of the attention that he got, like you said. Now, right. It could be that his dad is a known individual.
Yeah, isn't his dad like some kind of like high profile judge, like a Supreme Court justice?
Yeah, I want to say he's something, and I didn't pay enough attention the times that I've seen it, but he's something to where, you know, it would look bad upon everyone if he did something wrong. So I guess I could see where they're going with that a little bit.
Right.
Where it's like, we need to make sure you're as clean as possible, but yeah, so I thought that was interesting. And something else that I thought was interesting just as a choice was we have Avery and we have him sort of waking up. You know, I believe he's been shot either in the knee or close to his knee, because if it was just in his like a muscle, it wouldn't be that as much of a big deal, I don't think.
Right.
But he's really having problems getting around. But his dad's there and his wife's there and they have him cry. And he's saying, I'm sorry. And, you know, it took me a few times because I was like, what is he saying he's sorry for? And then, you know, I realized that, oh, okay, he's saying he's sorry for killing this person.
Right.
You know, he's saying sorry for the lives that he's ruined
or
impacted. And that completely went over my head the first couple of times. I was like, well, I don't understand. Like, what is he sorry? Like, he didn't do anything wrong. Like, what's his problem? You know, but now I was like, oh, well, of course, that's what it is. But I think that that's an interesting choice just to show him from the beginning as being someone that is trying to do what's right.
Right.
To where at the beginning when we see Gosling, he's not concerned with what's right or what's wrong. Like, that's not his character from where he starts in the film.
Right.
To where Bradley Cooper is the opposite of that. And so I think that, you know, there's some nice parallels here from where we're at in this stage of the film to where between the first section and the second section to where we have Rose Byrne, who is his wife, and they're having problems. And it's a lot of, you know, males not being able to get along, whatever the case, with their significant others. And I think that that's interesting. I do cringe when Ray Liotta shows up. Not because I, you know, I'm just like, oh no, this is not going to go well for him.
Right.
And I think, the most Ray Liotta the film gets is when he's pulled over, after he leaves the police station at one point and he's trying to rat on him. And Ray Liotta pulls him over and there's this shot and it's a beautiful shot. It's where Ray Liotta is completely hidden in the frame of the car up by kind of like it would be forward and above of where your head would be when you're driving.
Okay.
And Ray Liotta's face is completely hidden by that, and he just slowly kind of lowers his head down to where you can see part of his eye. And it's just this real, like, slow, subtle movement, and then he, you know, wants Bradley Cooper to follow him and go out in the woods, and, you know, you're assuming that he's going to get killed. So what did you think about that? I mean, getting away from the investigation part of it, because that's really just kind of the very beginning of this section. Then it deals more with like the police corruption.
Can we talk through this out loud? Like, does that relate to The Place Beyond the Pines? Like,
oh yeah. The Place Beyond the Pines. That's interesting. That's a Mohawk translation for Synecdoche, New York.
Okay.
Synecdoche and Mohawk roughly translates to The Place Beyond the Pines.
Okay.
So that's what the film is.
There are two scenes where, like, they're beyond the pines, isn't it? Isn't it that the first of the two scenes where?
Yeah, they just kind of drive out to the woods. I mean, it's like if you really want to be like science nerdy, they're not really pines. They're something different. But
right.
But yeah, they're out in the middle of the woods, and that's another callback later once the same character gets taken out in the woods again.
Right.
But yeah, that's what that means. That's what the title of the film is all about. Because that's something that I was like, what the hell does it even mean? Like, I don't.
So you went some more investigation, huh?
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. So I like that section. You know, because Leota makes me so nervous, and then he's just got such a dominating presence when he's in a character like this. Ray Liotta does. And he goes over to Kofi's house, and they basically barge in and say they're going to search the house. And that's another one of the moments where I was really nervous because, you know, I knew what they were going to find. And her line of, you know, you can't do this. And he says, look, let's all pretend that I have a search warrant if you pretend that your mother has papers.
Yeah, right.
And I'm just like, you fucking dickhead. You know, I'm just like, ugh, this guy. And that's the sort of thing where I'm like, okay, I can see this guy being a real guy.
Right.
Maybe not some of the circumstances that are involved in this part of the film, but I can see individual characters being real.
Right.
And he's got all his little latchkey guys that follow him around and do whatever. He's got his little yes men that just do whatever he says. And
yeah.
Ugh. I don't like that. I'm watching that. Just, you know, it's disenfranchising me while I'm watching it. Just like, oh, come on.
Well, I'm telling you, man, and it happens more than you think. I mean, right now I'm reading this court case in the Daily Herald here, where where Bass, as you call him, works. And they cover this these three Schomburg police officers, and I swear, Eric, these guys are like right out of The Shield. It's like Vic Mackey and Lem and all the gang. These guys were like the most crooked cops. They were drug enforcement, and they got caught with their hand in the cookie jar. It would be as if like the Forrest Whitaker character finally, you know, down Vic Mackey or something. And these guys are like in court right now. And it's just like, you don't realize, but that is what is real. I mean, that shit happens all the time.
It makes me sick.
Yeah,
it does. It makes me just sit and, you know, silently shake my head, which is not good podcasting.
No.
But yeah, so I mean that's whatever, I guess. But some of the other things that I really enjoyed about this section, and I think this is the showcase for Bradley Cooper to show what he can do, I think, because here he's playing a guy that is charismatic and likable, but he's not happy with himself.
Right.
He's playing like he feels like he's letting himself down.
Right.
To where everyone else is like, oh, you're a great guy. Just do what's right. Just, you know, follow the script. Everyone else goes along with this. Don't fuck this up. Like when he says, oh, you know, I should be on this sort of police, in charge of this group. And,
right.
And the chief kind of shuts him down. And the chief is a real piece of shit too, by the way.
Right. Right.
And, you know, then he turns in the money that they got and he's like, what are you doing?
Yeah. He's like, put that away. You didn't even want anyone to touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah. He specifically grabs a tissue. And so he doesn't come in contact with it. Doesn't have prints on it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's good. And he basically gets, you know, he doesn't get demoted, but he gets sent away and sent away to the evidence room. And they, you know, again, start trying to recruit him to help them out. And, oh, we've got this case. We just need a little of this. We just need you to help us out here. And, you know, that's when he starts kind of messing around with Luke's backpack. And he sees the picture from earlier that we mentioned.
Right.
He decides to hang on to that.
Uh-huh.
He finds the pack and he puts it on. And it was really interesting that in the, you know, at the beginning of the film, Luke very deliberately and very clearly puts it on the front. I mean, it's a backpack, but he wears it in the front like it's a baby Bjorn or something.
Right, right.
And but here, Bradley Cooper wears it on his back like you would typically wear it. And so, again, I think it's just another visual cue of these two being opposites.
I can see that, yeah. Right?
And so I really like that. And later, you know, we get this, you know, we're told it's 15 years and he's, you know, separated and he's become okay enough with himself to where he's going to run for assistant. Is it an assistant? District attorney, I think, or maybe it's just district.
He was running for attorney general.
Attorney general. That's what it is. That's right. I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's
attorney general. Right.
Yeah.
So a high office for sure.
Right.
And so, yeah, we've got to the point where he's apparently figured out the system well enough because he's able to politic his way up to where he's even up for this office.
Right.
You know, to where at the beginning when we see him, he's trying to turn in crooked cops to their crooked boss. You know, right. that shit's not going to work. So, you know, we do get to the 15 years in the future or the present, I guess, or whatever you want to say. So before we get to that section, is there anything else that you wanted to say about the middle part there?
Well, I'll tell you, he did follow the, you know, kind of cliche pattern of a divorcee father who is annoyed by the, you know, territory that comes along with being a dad and having these problems with his son and, you know, this kind of like convoluted excuse to get him to live with him at his house because there was like a change of, you know, and he does follow that, you know, I've got ambitions, you're doing this stuff for me. And it just, we've seen that kind of movie before. And I think that kind of speaks a little bit to the character, you know, development of what we see as somebody who seems to have, you know, a warm inside to somebody who then has progressed toward the end of that section into having a much more aloof, you know, soul.
Sure.
And, you know.
Yes.
And, it's detrimental to his family. You could maybe make presumptions that that's could have led to the breakup of his marriage. Of course, it's taking its toll on his son, who's completely messed up and, you know, defying him for defying him's sake and also following all the, you know, stereotypical paths that a rebellious teenager is now doing. And then, of course, fate makes it take this very unique turn into what it is in the third part.
Right.
Yeah.
So we get to the third part. And you know what I think is interesting is I like how, and I think this is a really common reaction, but I like how when we are at the beginning and we're talking about the Ryan Gosling section, it's, well, you know, he's doing this and this happened and I really like this. And it's really passionately supportive of the film.
Mm-hmm.
We get to the middle section. And it's like, well, you know, yeah, this, I kind of like this. This, I couldn't buy this at all, you know, and it's just like a slow fading, like, opinion of the film for me to where I'm like, oh, I'm loving this Gosling stuff and the Bradley Cooper stuff's okay. And I get to this last section. And it is, you know, with the kids. It's with the kids of Luke's character, of Ryan Gosling's character, and of Avery Cross's character. And they're the same age, you know, that was established early on. It's AJ instead of Avery and Jason, as was mentioned a few times. And I think what I think about this section is that I understand what he's going for. I understand what he's trying to do. He's trying to like tie this all into, you know, generations, and the mistakes and, you know, you're living up to this legacy and fathers and sons and nature versus nurture. And it's just this really grand idea. But my takeaway isn't as grand as I want it to be. And isn't as grand as I think Cian Francis trying to make it be. So what did you think of this final section? Not to have you be like, oh, actually, I liked it. You know, I liked it, so we're going to have a talk here. No,
I didn't like it. Well, first of all, I don't know that I buy the reasons. Like, what is the point of this person's harassment of another person? It can't be as shallow as, oh, you know, a dog-eat-dog world. Like, you know, bullies exist in society. I mean, and the way that he bullies him mentally, the way he bullies him physically, and then when he discovers a connection, the way that what's to be gained by this? Like, why is he acting out? He doesn't get attention from his father by doing it, does he? I mean, is that
well? Yeah, I mean, AJ's who we're talking about. He only gets negative attention, and I guess negative attention is still attention, right?
I guess so.
What I think is funny is I think this is very much a teacher thing right now. It's like, hey, what are you doing, kid? You know, it's like, what the fuck? Like, right. I see you doing all of these things. Why don't you just stop doing these things? Right. You know, it's all about choices. Like, just make the proper choice and everything's fine.
Right.
But, you know, we have this character of AJ played by Emery Cohen, and they very decidedly and pointed it out in the film, went with a Jersey Shore type of a guy.
Right.
Like a Jersey Shore character. Yeah. And he's, you know, got nicknames and he talks in a very urban way and speaks like, you know, he throws out his Ebonics all over the, you know, and he's dressing like he's not Caucasian, we'll say, like a minority, I would guess, like a stereotypical minority, we'll say.
Okay, yeah.
You know, and he's just very not representative of who his father is. And, you know, he has this wealthy dad. The family is divorced, but lots of families are divorced, and that doesn't mean that everyone acts out all the time.
Right.
And he has just chosen this path of, you know, I'm going to get stoned and I'm going to try to get some oxy and I'm going to, you know, have this party when my dad's not around and I'm just going to do whatever the hell I want because I can and nothing's going to happen to me.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just that sort of mentality, that sort of, there's no consequences in the world kind of mentality that it really rubs me the wrong way and is really going to be interesting when I start teaching full time. it's like, oh, kid, I need to go out in the hall for a second. I need to take a breather. We have
this a sociopath like this. I mean, and that's what this kid is a sociopath. I mean, the way that he, torments this, poor kid. What's his name? Is it Ben? What's the name of the?
Jason is Ryan Gosling's son, played by Dane DeHaan, who is most recently seen in Amazing Spider-Man 2 as Harry Osborn.
Oh, okay.
So anyway,
yeah, I'm not really into the whole Spider-Man
story. Well, we had a very lengthy and very heated and very intoxicated discussion about that not overly long ago.
Oh, really?
Yes. And he was one of the guys that, As a character, it was terrible, but as a performance, it was interesting, at best, I would say.
Right, right. No, and I liked, the only redeeming quality in that third scene is resorting back to the finality of that image that we spoke of, that Polaroid picture or whatever kind of picture it was. The way that he, of course, sends word to his mother that he's alive by sending, you know, that anonymous envelope, right? Isn't that kind of how the film ends?
Yeah, it's we'll get to how it ends, but he essentially lets her know that he's alive and,
right.
You know, that he's found his dad, basically.
Right, right. That's
kind of what he's going for there, I think.
Yeah.
How long did it take for you to figure out that Jason was Luke's kid? Was it something that you figured right away that this wasn't just some random kid he was hanging out with and wanting to smoke with? Or
I wish I could tell you what I knew that what the exact moment was. To be honest, I can't remember because I have to admit I was a little intoxicated through the progression of watching the film.
Nice. I like it.
And sometimes, and that's why I don't know if you caught me. Have to ask, like, yeah, that's what he did, right?
At the end. Oh, no, that's perfectly fine. That's how the majority, there's another peek behind the curtain. That's how the majority of these films are watched. It's a lot of late night, like, I better put that in.
My day, so. Yeah,
it's a little, I guess I'm recording tomorrow. I better get this watched. I don't care that it's late. That's why I gotta take a lot of notes.
I wish I could tell you the exact moment that I realized that it was Jason, who was playing opposite, this other, they both ended up like lone wolves, if you want to call them that.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And of course he's going to a new high school, and as fate would have it, he sidles up to the other loner, and he of course instantly uses this new relationship to benefit himself and takes advantage of him, and of course. He figures it out I remember like a Google search and some things, and he figured out that his dad had been shot, and, this boy's father may have been related to that.
Sure, because, yes.
Of what happened. And so I remember that revelation, but I don't remember the revelation of when I figured out that myself, that Jason was
Gosling's kid. Yeah. Because I remember watching it and just thinking, okay, well, I remember thinking I can't tell if I just don't like this character of AJ because of this Jersey Shore thing, or if I don't like the performance, but because it just seemed like such a completely different, like it just seemed so jarringly different than the first two parts of the film. Because it's being carried by this Jersey Shore guy, and that's what he is. He's playing a stereotype, so it's not like he's that, I don't know that he's that rounded. I think the first two parts have some rounded characters. I don't know that he is. I think that Jason is, but AJ, I think that it's a little bit performance based why I don't think that he is, because his character arc is he starts out as a bad kid, and at the end his dad wins district or attorney general. I keep wanting to make him a lawyer. But yeah. He wins attorney general, and he's kind of there clapping, and he's all cleaned up, and he's in a suit, and you're kind of like, okay, yeah, he's going to turn it around. But it just kind of seemed like, well, I'm here for my dad, and fuck this. And
yeah.
that was kind of what I would have.
Out of water in that setting, yeah.
Yeah. And so, I don't know, like that part really didn't work. And I don't know if it's, like I said, I don't know if it's the actor's fault or if it's just the character that was written for him or what. But what I did like is I thought Dane DeHaan as Jason was really good, because he looked like a troubled high school kid, looked like the sort of loner stoner, as AJ called him, to where he's the guy that, I think AJ says he likes to, he's like, oh, you're one of those kids that just gets stoned and then goes and draws all day, right? and that's the way that Dane DeHaan looks. So you're like, oh, okay, I could see that sort of. And
he got him pegged right off the bat there.
Yeah, and so I think that's good. And you know, he becomes curious about his father and wants to know more about him. And a lot of it stems from AJ and him getting caught by the police when they're scoring the oxy.
Right.
And AJ being able to blow it off, and Jason being brought to school by Kofi.
Right.
And AJ's like, that's your dad? Like, insinuating, why do you have an African-American father?
Right.
Like, that's your dad? And they have a discussion or an argument back and forth. And then they have this really awkward little moment at dinner where Jason says, so what's the deal with my dad? Just out of nowhere, just brings it up. And, as living in an environment where I have a 6-year-old that's not biologically mine, but that I'm living with my girlfriend. And so for her to just one day say, so what's the deal with my dad? That would be so uncomfortable.
Right.
It's like, well, we can talk about that. How about not in the middle of dinner? mm-hmm. in the middle of conversation, you know? And right. so it's a, and so I think that that's interesting. And he finally, you know, gets the name and gets the Google search. And what I found a little shaky about that is he gets the newspaper article and it says that he's killed by Avery Cross. And he's been smoking with this AJ, and maybe he doesn't know that it's Avery, but I would imagine you know that the guy's name that you're hanging out with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, his name's Avery Cross or Avery Jr. or AJ Cross, mm-hmm. and my dad was killed by a guy named Avery Cross. Whoa, that's weird.
Right.
Maybe I'll bring it up to him and be like, dang, did you know this? Like, isn't this a weird coincidence? You know, but he doesn't bring it up, and it's only at the party later where they
yeah, the conversation occurs at the party.
Yeah, that where he brings it up after he's all fucked up.
I really thought that that's what we were going to see in the bedroom when he had you know had him by gunpoint and you know fired a shot to show he was like meaning business or whatever and tied him up. I thought that it was going to be game over for him. So I guess that was another. The revelation that he survived that was, you know, another thing to delve into as to why, you know,
sure,
investigate.
Sure. Yeah.
What did he say about him, you know, granting mercy to this tormentor, you know.
Sure. I really liked that. Like, I was really, I liked the way that the film manipulated me there because I was for sure he was going to kill him. Mm-hmm. I was for sure that he was going to kill Bradley Cooper's character.
Yeah.
And he is really good at looking. He's got that unhinged look, you know, he's got that dangerous look to where his dad in the film, Ryan Gosling, can act that way. He has the same kind of face. It's not like he looks crazy or something, but he can act in such a way to where it seems like he's unhinged to where Dane DeHaan just looks like he's going to do something that he shouldn't be doing.
Exactly.
You yeah. know? And so I think that that's really good, but it was kind of frustrating that he didn't pick up the whole name thing, I guess. But one of the, like, the ultimate point that I was nervous in the film was the pharmacy sequence, and he's trying to score more drugs, and he's sneaking around in the middle of the, like, evening behind this pharmacy and just looking for Oxy while the pharmacist is waiting on a customer, and he finds it, grabs it, and then, like, sneaks out, runs away from the pharmacist and then gets on his bike and goes to the party. And I was like, oh my God, get out of there. You know, yeah. I'm very much like on this kid's side and not wanting to see him get busted, even though he's doing a thing that you wouldn't exactly, encourage a child to do or, a high schooler to do. Uh-huh. But I thought that was interesting. I really liked Robin's relationship, Luke's former partner. I liked his relationship with Jason when they're at the trailer and at the shop and he's, kind of showing him all this, like, oh, here's your dad's sunglasses. That's where he gets the picture. All those things. I thought that was really, really nice. And I loved that Jason was finding hope in this father figure that wasn't a good guy. You know, it's like he is discovering who his dad is. And it's like, oh, cool. He used to be able to ride motocross and he used to do this and do that and fix up things. But he's like a shitty guy, but the son is still admiring him no matter how bad he is. And it's that kind of thing where, you know, children always want to like impress their parents or they always want to, put their parents on a pedestal, sort of an idea. And I think that that's pretty effective there in that part.
Yeah, I agree entirely.
And then one of the things that I thought was pretty intense about this, and I'm sort of jumping around all over the place here, but I think that the violence in this is really quick and very intense and very lasting to where we talked about Kofi getting hit in the face and about how, sudden that was and about how, you know, scary that was really.
Right.
And we have the shooting in the middle section, the end of the first section.
Well, yeah, the lasting image of his lifeless eyes being open
Mm-hmm.
Staring into the sky because he fell backwards.
Yeah, with his leg being that weird. And
yeah.
And then we have the fight here at AJ's house. And that's right. The thing where he gets the best of him, because of course he does. Like, Emery Cohen is built like he's an athlete, like a football player or something.
Right.
And Dane DeHaan is not.
He's like, not. Yeah, he's like the water boy.
Yes, he is. And so he gets pushed around, and he gets, you know, hit maybe like four times. But it's, you know, some impact behind every strike.
Absolutely.
And he's getting his ass kicked, and I'm like, oh, man. And so I thought that was really intense. And, you know, they do a tremendous job with makeup throughout the rest of the film with his face being kind of all bruised and puffy. And so I think that's really good. But, you know, as the film ends, he tells his mom that he's fine. He rents he buys the motorcycle from a guy, and Jason ends up riding off, you know, kind of through the trees, as sort of similar to what Luke was doing when he was going to the city, going back to Roe,
right,
in that section. So I thought that was a pretty good way to end the film, even though ultimately that third act was a little disappointing. Like, I feel like it was a case of diminishing returns as we kept going. Like, I really liked the first section. The second one I thought was pretty good. And the third one I was kind of like, all right, I've had my fill. You know, like, I'm kind of done at this point.
Well, I can't say that I want to see this movie five times. I appreciate that there's probably a lot of levels to investigate. But although I liked it and I'm glad I saw it, I don't know that I would go out of my way to see it again. I certainly, there are things about it I appreciate. I'm sure there are many other levels that one could delve into. I mean, I only spoke to the political side of it, and that's what really got me kind of into it, especially in that middle section.
Sure.
I think the creativity and the cinematography and the character development in the first act was the highlight. I think that was its strongest point because it had Ryan Gosling in it.
Mm-hmm.
I think overall, though, I couldn't believe that you brought this movie up to me, and when I did some investigation about it, I couldn't believe that it wasn't in my queue, because Rotten Tomatoes gave it 80% on the button, so it should have been on my queue. I missed it somehow.
Slipping Bruns.
And then I was thinking, well, maybe it was that Ryan Gosling film that came out that got hammered, that was supposed to be this like really good film. Mm-hmm. What is it? What was the one that he was in?
Only God Forgives.
That's the one. And then I thought, oh, maybe it was that movie. And it wasn't Only for God Forgives. And then I feel like, well, let's put this on my Netflix. It came, and I'm glad I saw it. I can see the similarities from, you know, Blue Valentine. And obviously, Ryan Gosling is a phenomenal actor. So I'm glad that I saw it. And I think it started off really strong. And I wish it would have carried through all the way to the finish that way, but I don't think it quite did.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement. I think one of the problems that the film has, I think, is I feel like it's trying to say something, you know, and like I told you, I've seen it a few times, and I don't know that I can quite dig out what it's trying to say.
Right.
Because I think there are a lot of possibilities, you know, like I was saying, it's a tale of, you know, two sides of a coin. Mm-hmm. There's the fathers and sons.
Right.
And there's, you know, these males and their relationship with their spouses or significant others. There is, you know, the whole nature versus nurture with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
There is, you know, because they were saying this is Kofi's kid. You know, well, I'm your dad, he says, but he still acts just like Luke. Right. There is, you know, is it that this generation is just worse? Because both of these kids are worse people at this point in their lives than their parents were.
Right.
You know, so it's like, is that what he's saying? Is it where the generations are just, you know, it's like the Eastwood get off my lawn sort of thing, to where everything's not as good as it used to be,
mm-hmm,
kind of a thing. Or do they just have it worse? You know, is it because they have, you know, whatever the case, just more things to struggle with. So I don't know. Like I enjoyed the film in that it makes me think. It makes me want to figure it out. But then I don't know that there's enough on screen for me to actually come to a conclusion that I'm happy with. Like, I think I could reach for a lot of conclusions, but I don't know that enough of them are actually there in front of me that I can sit down and say, okay, this is what it is. You know? So that's The Place Beyond the Pines. Did you have anything else, Steve, before we wrap this one up?
No, I think that pretty much sums it all up. I would recommend giving it a spin. I think it's worth it, simply because of the performance of Ryan Gosling. And,
sure.
And so I would definitely recommend it as something that you should see. But I don't know that I would, put it up for any Academy Awards or anything.
Sure.
Which, by the way, I don't think it would have already, you know, been in last year's awards, which I don't think got anything. So.
No, it didn't. It's a thing where I think Blue Valentine is the stronger work.
Right.
He is, Derek Cianfrance is currently filming a film called The Light Between Oceans, which is a drama starring Michael Fassbender and Rachel Weisz.
Okay.
And so that is currently in, like, they're filming, so there's no release date or anything like that yet. But that's his next work, and that'll be his fourth feature, but his third recent film. So if you have any comments, suggestions, or movies that you'd like to hear us talk about specifically for Podshots, you can email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the show over at Twitter under the handle @plainlabelpod, where you can follow me. I'm @ericwilliams79. We also have a Facebook page for the show where you could like it. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. And if you like what we do, you could go over to our website, which is plainlabelpodcast.tumblr.com. And over there, we're going to have an Amazon ad on the right-hand side. If you click on that ad, it takes you to Amazon's homepage. And what I would like you to do is bookmark that homepage. So then anytime you go to Amazon and buy anything from there, it helps us out. It doesn't change anything for you. It helps pay for our Netflix, our movie rentals, our movie tickets, and that sort of thing. So I want to thank Steve once again for coming on. We're almost to double digits, you and I, Mr. Bruns. This is our ninth film.
Many, huh?
This is our ninth film that we've done. You're still the record holder. If people wanted to hear more from you, they could check you out on our previous discussions on Take Shelter, Shotgun Stories, Tall Hot Blonde, West of Memphis, Fruitvale Station, Compliance, Searching for Sugarman, and Dear Zachary. But if people wanted to get in touch with you specifically, where could they do so?
You can just friend me on Facebook, Steve Bruns. I have an email address, Seinfeld4, SEINFELDFORE, @yahoo.com. But I'm not really a Twitter guy, so sorry.
That's fine. I like that. All right, well, thank you for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with another co-host and another film.